Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be your views as well, because this is Open Line Wednesday, and we invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call if you have something you'd like to talk about. Don't have to talk on the subject I'm talking about, but it was very interesting today. Why? They released a new book. It was written by Scott McClellan, who used to be the press secretary for the President of the United States. And his book is rather controversial because, of course, he tells the truth there. And I believe he's telling the truth. So if you watch the evening news, of course, they've brought on all the other people there from the Bush administration who, of course, would say, oh, well, he didn't really mean what he said. I don't know why he would have said those terrible things. Why, we talked to Scott McClellan, and he said that the editor changed a lot of it. The editor claims they didn't at all. But what McClellan really said was, and I simply quote here, over the summer of 2002, top Bush aides had outlined a strategy for carefully orchestrating the coming campaign to aggressively sell the war. In the permanent campaign era, it was all about manipulating sources of public opinion to the president's advantage. What I do know is that war should only be waged when necessary, and the Iraq War was not necessary. That's what Scott McClellan said, the press secretary. You saw him many times on television. And he was simply saying the war wasn't necessary with Iraq, and it wasn't. Certainly you read the writings of four-star Marine General Anthony Zinni, and he will tell you that he was commander of CENTCOM. He said, I saw all the intelligence reports. I was in charge of that whole area. The war wasn't necessary. We should have finished up the war with Afghanistan. We should have gone after Al-Qaeda and the terrorists. Instead of that, we attacked Iraq, and it wasn't necessary. And a million people have died as Iraqis, and they tell us only about 4,700 Americans have died in Iraq and Afghanistan. But, of course, according to Joyce Riley and others, that figure, they're simply lying to you. If they can get them out of Iraq and get them over to Landstuhl, Germany, or other military hospitals outside the war zone, they're not counted as war casualties. And certainly almost a third of our young men have brain injuries as a result of the percussion, and another third of them have some other sort of disease. They call it post-traumatic stress. But is it simply another one of the experiments that they've done creating disease in our servicemen, like they did with the first Gulf War? And if you don't believe they experimented on our boys in the first Gulf War, you really need to get our four tapes out on vaccine A, the experimental vaccine they gave to American soldiers, just to see what would happen. Exactly as when they did experiments on the American people in the 50s and 60s. And if you've never read the Rockefeller Committee report about the experiments that were carried out on American civilians without their knowledge or consent, and some of them died as a result of it, and everything has been done to cover that up. It was covered in a report issued by the Veterans Department back in 1994. We have it. We call it the Rockefeller Committee Report because it was signed by Senator Jay Rockefeller. Well, our telephone number here is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you have to say about the war. You know, last weekend was Memorial Day, and of course, I'd like to read you one of my favorite poems. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow. Between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Scarce days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. So take up our quarrel with the foe, and we'll be back in just a moment here to finish the program. Well, certainly, ladies and gentlemen, what happened in the Second World War was one of the in the First World War was one of the great tragedies of all time. But let me complete that poem here. Take up our quarrel with a foe. To you from failing hands we throw. The torch be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, although poppies blow in Flanders field. And you know, Chris, they used to actually read that poem in classes. They used to read it on Memorial Day, and grown men cried, because everybody realized the futility of what had actually happened. But the question is, nobody ever asked who was really responsible for that war. And people have forgotten it immediately after that war. Why, of course, there was a great deal of talk. Well, it was the arms manufacturers. It was the merchants of death. That was the term that they used to describe the arms manufacturers. And there were many people who honestly believed that that's why the war was fought. But you see, although the arms manufacturers made a profit, that wasn't why the war was fought at all. The war was fought because there were people who wanted to bring about a world government. And they created World War I, just as they'd created the Boer War before that and the Spanish-American War before that. And then, of course, when the First World War failed to bring about the League of Nations, why, of course, they established the Second World War. And if you read Professor Quigley's wonderful book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and we do carry that book. It was suppressed actively for many years, but we have the book, and it's available now, along with an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells about how his book was suppressed. But, of course, Professor Quigley talks about how, of course, it was the leaders of Great Britain who were actively encouraging Adolf Hitler to attack the Rhineland, to attack the Alsace-Lorraine, to attack Austria, and of course they were encouraging Adolf Hitler at every turn. And people find it so difficult to believe that the English would be encouraging Adolf Hitler, unless you understand that there really were people who wanted a war, and if you're going to have a war, you have to have an enemy. And what better enemy than Adolf Hitler? He was deeply involved in the occult. He was, in some respects, a madman. But remember, the people who were controlling the British government were also deeply involved in the occult. And, of course, the occultists had always wanted the world government, and that's really what the war was all about. It was an effort to bring about the replacement for the League of Nations. Only this time it would be called the United Nations. And, of course, the United Nations was to usher in the one world government and then the utopian rule of peace. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment and welcome your calls. Well, this is Dr. Stan at Sydney. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we were talking really at the beginning of the program about how Scott McCullen, who was the press secretary, who would always appear on television, you know, defending the president and defending the charges that Karl Rove and Skipper Liddy and the others were involved with the Valerie Plume case, and of course, eventually, he writes, he was lied to. And then he goes on to say that the Iraq war was totally unnecessary, that the administration used propaganda of one sort or another, although he says they didn't lie, they simply shaded the truth. They simply shaded the truth. Now, those are his words, not mine. Ladies and gentlemen, when you say the truth, that's a lie, whatever you call it. And when a million Iraqis died, you wiped out most of the Christian population in Iraq, supposedly by a Christian administration. Why would a Christian administration wipe out the 10% of the Iraqis who were Christians there? They've been forced to flee for their lives. Why would you do something like that? Why would you, of course, set Paul Bremer over immediately after the Americans had taken Baghdad and have him dissolve the Iraqi army, dissolve the Iraqi police force? I mean, fire the people working in the hospitals, working in the schools, close down the factories, suddenly fire the people who were responsible for water and electricity and sewage. Why would you do something like that? Why would intelligent people do something like that? Because you know you're going to have chaos, and that's exactly what they did. A lot of the people had jobs before working in the factories. They had no other source of income other than to join the insurgents, where they were able to get a salary. And who is paying it? Why, our good friends in Saudi Arabia, who are such good friends with the Bushes. And let me point out, ladies and gentlemen, nothing as it appears to be. There are really people who want war. And as horrible as it is to think, why, of course, we are waging a senseless war over in Iraq. We are talking about keeping our troops there more or less indefinitely. We are building the largest embassy in Baghdad that exists anywhere in the world. Most of our senior embassies are, you know, on half an acre of land, an acre of land. I think there's 120 acres of land over there in Baghdad, and this is a permanent facility. And the Iraqis are smart enough to know that we have no intention of leaving. Oh, they tell us that things are better now. There have been fewer people killed this last week or two, but of course they were telling this several months ago, and then of course the tempo of violence increased. And we are an army of occupation. We are not there to free up the Iraqis. We are there, of course, to exploit their oil. But even more than that, I personally believe that our troops are in Iraq so that we will have troops close to Iran, because I believe, and all of the information I have, is that sooner or later, the Bush administration and the neoconservatives who control them, who are carrying out Machiavelli's concepts, want to expand the war. And you may wonder what this has to do with Machiavelli, and of course that's the subject of our May newsletter, which I hope you'll want to get, because it simply goes into great detail and quotes a speech that Congressman Ron Paul gave back in the year 2003, talking about the neoconservative movement, which of course is carrying out the programs that were advocated by Plato and by Machiavelli, and certainly by a gentleman named Michael Ledeen, who is of course a supporter of Machiavelli's concepts. And what did Machiavelli advocate? He advocated the use of war because it controls the people. He wrote a book called The Prince, in which he said basically that the prince has to be willing to use cruelty and lies and deceit if he wants to rule and rule effectively. But he has to have the people behind him. He has to deceive the people, but he always has to have war, because war is a vehicle by which the prince can rule. That was what Machiavelli wrote. Machiavelli was born, I believe, in 1462. He was part of the administration that ran Florence, the city of Florence, between about 1496 and 1512, when Pope Justin II actually was able to hire Spanish troops and defeat the army of Florence, and then of course reinstall the Medici's there, and Machiavelli was forced to flee. But while living in exile, he wrote a book called The Prince. And the book Sunia tells how a ruler should rule. And of course, this idea of Machiavellian has sort of almost a sinister tone to it. And that's exactly what he advocated. Use deceit and lies and cruelty, but always have wars. You needed to have wars to subjugate the people on your side, to rally them behind the government, just as Plato had written about in the Republic. And of course, many of the ideas that Machiavelli put forward were the same ideas that Plato had put forward, because in my estimation, having studied both of them, they were part and parcel of the mystery religions and carrying on the traditions of the mystery religions. But of course, Michael Ledeen is a modern day philosopher, a leader of the neoconservative movement that controls the Bush administration. He was the chief advisor to Karl Rove, and of course the Ledeen has written extensively about Machiavelli and Machiavellian techniques, not condemning this aberration of humanity, this use of cruelty and lies and deceit, but defending it. In fact, even passing out copies of a book he had written about Machiavelli, complimenting and supporting Machiavelli, issuing those books to many of our congressmen, and most of our congressmen who actually had read the books and of course understood that wars are never fought for the reason you tell the people. You've got to get the people behind you, but war is never fought for the reason you tell the people, but always for other purposes. And that's exactly what the current war is being fought, for other purposes. But they do not dare tell the American people. We've got to pretend, oh, we're fighting for freedom, we're fighting for democracy, while we can't pull our troops out. My goodness, those boys who died would have died for nothing if we pulled them out. Ladies and gentlemen, 58,000 Americans died for nothing in Vietnam because the Gulf of Tonkin never took place. It was all a lie, as was the attack on the Maine, as certainly were the reasons for going into the First World War, as the reasons for getting into the Second World War, because the government knew the attack was coming at Pearl Harbor and did nothing to avoid it. In fact, specifically withheld the information from the commanders at Pearl Harbor, and when Admiral Kimmel tried to put the fleet to sea, the remaining battleships under his command to sea, he was ordered to bring them back to Pearl Harbor. They wanted a target there. They wanted the war, because they were going to get us into a war with Germany by certainly getting us into a war with Japan. It was all planned ahead of time. We needed the Second World War because they wanted the United Nations. And until you understand the occult forces working behind the scenes, you can't understand that. But if you've never read Robert Stinnett's wonderful book, Day of Deceit, that's Robert Stinnett's Day of Deceit. We have it. We also have my interviews with Robert Stinnett and our 4-tape set on Pearl Harbor. You need to listen to them. You need to weep. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let's go, 5. That's 464-8295. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm well. Thank you. I trust you're well. And I first of all want to thank you for that tidbit of history regarding Pope Justin in his ousting of Machiavelli.
He ousted the people who were ruling, of which Machiavelli was part. Machiavelli was not the ruler, but he was one of the chiefs there in Florence during this period between about 1496 and 1512, when of course they ousted the revolutionary group and reinstalled the Medicis, who had been in power in Florence before that, and they were an evil group as well.
Yeah, I was thinking a righteous group was replacing a evil group. But
you have one evil group replacing another evil group, unfortunately.
Is that the true account of history then, predominantly?
I think it really is. It's very, very seldom that you have righteous people. We've had a few righteous people, and they usually get a bad rap. Certainly, I believe that Oliver Cromwell was a righteous individual, who of course took over in Great Britain in the 1600s and tried to run a righteous society, a Calvinist society. Of course, he's got a very, very bad rap. But tragically, if you look throughout the world today, you find very, very few righteous people. If you read the book that we carry, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, written by John Perkins, he will tell you that he actually had the opportunity of meeting with some righteous people. One of them was the ruler of Ecuador. The other was the ruler of Panama. They'd both been democratically elected. They wanted to do what was right for their people. And because they refused to give in to John Perkins' schemes, he was instructed get them, these leaders, to borrow a great deal of money and so that they could get the countries under debt so they could control the natural resources of the country. And both of these rulers refused to do it, and of course both of them were assassinated by what John Perkins referred to as the jackals. They were professional killers sent in by the Central Intelligence Agency to kill world leaders who wouldn't go along with the United States plan. And, of course, you need, of course, to get the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman or our 4-tape set. And I believe we have one of the last supplies of the book. It's out of print now, but it's an excellent book. It gives you real insight into what really goes on behind the scenes. Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, but we fortunately have a 4-tape set of my interviews with him. In fact, we have 2 4-tape sets of interviews with him. You need to understand what's going on, Jack. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We'll be back here in just a moment, and we'll look forward to your calls. Ladies and gentlemen, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. What are you doing to oppose what's taking place over in Iraq today and what may very well take place if we expand the war and go to war with Iran. All right, Jack, go ahead, right ahead.
This is Dr. Stan. You mentioned Admiral Zinni, did you, and also perhaps Ricardo Sanchez. Did they describe what you said about who was the guy that Bremer? Did those military commanders document what you said, that Bremer had disbanded the civilian police force and the Iraqi military?
Well, Zinni did, and certainly in his interview on 60 Minutes, he made the remark that, first of all, he said Bremer was a great guy, but of course he did everything wrong. And of course, Ricardo Sanchez has written a book entitled Wiser in Battle, and I'll be interviewing General Sanchez next week. I haven't read his book, but I'll have to get as much of it read as I can in the between now and then. I think it's going to be on Tuesday afternoon at 4 o'clock Pacific time. But, of course, Ricardo Sanchez, you can read his talk he gave. It's my December 2007 newsletter, and if you read that, he simply says we were not allowed to win the war. Now, he does not specifically mention Bremer. He does mention the policies that were pushed onto him and onto Iraq that, of course, led to the disaster, though.
And didn't they also make a big push and a big a political deal regarding this new constitution, the Iraqi constitution? I remember it was such a big deal with those people, Rumsfeld and the rest of them. And so I presume that the constitution that was implemented would have to favor the United States military installed government there, right?
I really can't comment it. I haven't gone over or studied the Iraqi constitution, but I do know that we pretty well wrote that thing. It had to conform to what the Americans wanted, and certainly it was not really written primarily for the Iraqis. It was written, you know, according to the dictates of the occupying power.
Maybe Ricardo Sanchez would have something to say about that.
Well, we can ask him about that one when we have a chance to talk to him. I'm really looking forward to it. He's a man of integrity in a world of equivocal men.
Well, I hope we get a chance to hear that, Dr. Stan.
Well, that'll be next Tuesday, my understanding, at 4 o'clock Pacific time, or 6 o'clock your time, if you can get our programs. You'll have to get it on the Internet a short wave, because maybe we can get him back again in the evening so you can hear him.
Yeah, that'd be marvelous. Well, Dr. Stan, thank you so much. And believe me, every day as I traverse my neighborhood, I meet people and I knock on doors and I admonish them to go to your website, to read your monthly newsletters, etc., and if possible, to tune into your radio program.
Well, I thank you so much for that. And actually, of course, we have some brand new cards we're going to make available to people. We'll give them a half a dozen cards. They can simply pass out to others when they're going door to door. So the next time you write to us, just ask for a few cards. We'll be glad to give them to you.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless, and thanks so much. And that was Jack from Michigan. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And let's go to Jonathan calling from North Dakota. Jonathan, how are you listening to us?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm listening to you on shortwave, actually.
Okay, very good. How's the reception?
Oh, it's really good.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yep. First, I want to make a quick comment. I'm 17 years
old. Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And right now we're talking to Jonathan, who's calling from North Dakota, and he says he's 17 years old. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yep, I just wanted to say that I really enjoy your program, and I've learned a lot of things from it, listening to you 5 nights a week. So just wanted to thank you for that. But my question was, I know you've studied the occult a lot, and I wanted to know your opinion on water dowsing or water witching, as some people call it, whether that's just a scientific phenomenon or if it's really some spiritual aspect to that.
It is a spiritual aspect. In fact, we're told in the scriptures that, I mean, certainly avoid the diviners. And there are certainly some people who are just, you know, charlatans on water witching. But I've actually, you know, held the wands and had seen a twist in my hands. And I'll tell you, it's a spooky feeling. And I know other people, I've seen them, you know, certainly some people have this gift. But it is not a gift, it's a curse. And you can really tap into the supernatural and you can witch a well. But you don't want to do that. That's not what God intended. Okay, anything else, Jonathan?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
And of course, remember, of course, in the scriptures we're told to avoid the fortune tellers and the mediums, and all of these people are tapping into the other dimension. Now, some of them are frauds, but some of them really can't contact the other dimension. And of course, it's a frightening thing. It's not a gift, it's a curse. Okay?
Yep, well, thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
God bless and bye-bye. Okay, fine, let's go to... I guess this is Chris in Michigan, and again our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi Chris, how are you doing?
I'm fine, how are you?
I'm doing fine, how are you hearing us tonight?
Good, I'm hearing you real well on my shortwave.
Okay,
and
very good.
You were mentioning about World War One when you were mentioning the Maine.
Right, no, the Maine was Spanish-American War.
Right. But, you know, all this stuff had led up to World War One.
Right.
And the American people had a slogan. I'm a bit of a historian. I've had a lot of history in college. One of the things, the slogans that the American people had in their papers at that time in history was, remember the Maine, remember the Maine, and the H-E-double-L was Spain.
No, well, that was the Spanish-American War.
Right. I understand that.
Right.
But all this stuff over time had led up to World War One.
Right.
Over a period of time, but...
In fact, the slogan of World War One was the war to make the world safe for democracy, the war to end all wars. Those were the two slogans they used with World War One. Well, of course, why would we want to make the world safe for democracy when America was a republic and our founding fathers hated the idea of a democracy because they knew it, as Plato had said, always leads to despotism. But it was really all about the war to end all wars, because that was to bring about the United Nations and the world government. That's what it was all about.
And that was also by Woodrow Wilson, his 14 points and a Treaty of Versailles.
Right. You're absolutely right. And, of course, you know, I was a history minor at college back in, I was going to college up between about 46 and 49. And, you know, and I really thought I knew a lot about history. I was a minor in history, but I learned so much after I got out of college, and I realized that so much of what I'd learned was not truth. It was simply a part of the legend that we were supposed to believe. The truth of the matter was entirely different than what we'd been told.
And you know what was sad is that, and even today, you ask these young kids about what this country is, they say it's a democracy. A democracy really means socialism.
Right.
This country is actually a republic.
Right,
you're right.
In fact, we have a little pamphlet called "We're a Republic," and we simply take all the wonderful quotations from out of the past and put them into one place to show that our founding fathers did not want a democracy. They wanted a republic, which is why, of course, Benjamin Franklin, as he was leaving the place there in Philadelphia, where the hall where they drafted the Constitution, and a woman came up to him and asked him, you know, what sort of government have you given us, Mr. Franklin? And his remark was, a republic, if you can keep it.
Yes, if we could keep it, but the thing of it is, the way things are going now, we'll never keep. This country will never be a republic. We'll end up being a socialistic country.
Well,
and it's sad. I mean, it is so sad. I mean, our own government, you look back in history, and we got Masons involved and everything else, and so people understand this is all cult.
In fact,
it's all cultic. Every bit of it's cult.
It was very interesting. The other evening, we watched the National Treasure, number two. And, of course, it had a lot of interesting things in it. Of course, it's one of these, you know, Indiana-type Jones dramas. But they talked about Albert Pike. They talked about the Knights of the Golden Circle. And, of course, they talked about the Masonic influence on our society, which most people are totally unaware of. Most people have never heard of the Knights of Golden Circle or Albert Pike or understand, of course, the terrible influence that he had had on our society.
And it's interesting. Most people never heard of Skull and Bones until the Bushes got in office.
Amen to that. Well, all we can do is keep trying to tell people, and we hope you'll keep listening, Chris, and that you'll get those people back there in Michigan listening on a regular basis to Radio Liberty. They can hear us on satellite. They can get a special inexpensive dish and hear us 9 hours a day. They can listen on the internet. They can listen certainly on the on radio stations or on shortwave.
You know what, I love shortwave radio, and everybody says, you know, listen with computers and stuff. One thing I like about a shortwave, I can put this thing right in bed with me, and I can listen all over the globe. I don't need a computer to sit down at a desk at, and I got a little shortwave radio.
Well, of course.
It does the job.
I mean,
not only that, but when we, you know, as American citizens, I think when it comes to the election this fall, I think we really better check our hearts and our minds, you know, and our hearts, especially with the Lord. Who do we think would be the best person to even vote for, even though all this stuff is all hooked together and the Trilateral Commission, all this other junk. And I'm just hoping that there will be hope for America. If not, this country, who knows? We don't know when she's going to fall, but someday, I'll probably be in my lifetime. I'm in my 40s, and I don't want to see this country fall in my lifetime. But, you know, if people don't start waking up, I'm afraid she will.
Well, you know, one of the things that really got me started in this whole quest some 46 years ago was when I turned onto the wrong radio program and I heard a man saying, the United States is not a democracy, it's a republic. And that sounded so ridiculous. I mean, everybody knows America is a democracy, and he gave a few quotations as to why we were a republic, and I started reading at that time. I hadn't read a book or even a magazine for, you know, 10 years, going through my training and through my medical school and residency and the military. And I started reading, and I began to read the wonderful stories of the past and what our founders had written, and they were very wise men. And they recognized that democracy always degenerate into despotism. And of course it was Mrs. Powell who had actually encountered Benjamin Franklin there on the steps in the hall there in Pennsylvania. And of course,
these kids don't know American history, and all they need to see is the Pledge of Allegiance and to the Republic for which it stands, you know. And Dwight D. Eisenhower added, to one nation, under God, indivisible, for liberty and justice for all. That's all they need to see, to the republic. We are a republic. And these kids in these junior high and high schools, they don't even know their own history of the country. They don't even know. I mean, they have no clue.
But that's not their fault. That is because they've been indoctrinated in school. They don't educate our kids.
Right.
They indoctrinate them. And it's the people who control, of course, the major universities, who've taught the teachers who teach our children. And your job and my job is try to reach them and get them to learn the truth.
And Stan, I'm going to share this with you. My teacher that I had in college had a doctorate degree. His favorite part of teaching was World 7. I've had him for World 7. I've had American history.
Hold that thought for just a minute. We'll be right back with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We have Chris calling from Michigan, and she said he was in college. She took a great deal of history, and she's just talked about how so much of what she learned really wasn't true. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and go right ahead, Chris.
And anyway, the best teacher I had, my teacher was right from Richmond, Virginia, and he went to the University of South Carolina, and that's how he taught his classroom, like it was the University of South Carolina 40 years ago. And he taught us history. He told us right in front of the room. He says, some of you here will like what I say, some of you here don't like what I say. But he said, I'm going to present history as it is. And I was very fortunate to have the history teacher that I have. And, you know, Mr. Claypool has already, you know, passed away and gone. But if any of his family, you know, down south is, you know, living or listening, I just want to thank you for your relative. But anyway, I had such a good history teacher, I can't complain, because I did very, very well in his classroom. And he even acknowledged that the universities that we had in this country, like Harvard, Princeton, Yale, were at one time were all Christian colleges in this country.
Well, you know, what's really so interesting, Chris, you're absolutely right. The first major university that was created in America after William and Mary was Harvard. It was actually, it was organized to train young men to become ministers. And
right.
Just before, you know, just within a relatively few years, the wicked people, those who hate Christianity, had taken over Harvard. And so then they organized Yale, you know, at Hartford, Connecticut. And Yale University was to be utilized to train young men to become ministers and missionaries and to preach the gospel. And within a few years, these occult forces, which were here in America at that time, had taken over Yale. So then they organized Princeton, and it was going to teach people to be Presbyterian ministers. And well, of course, you know what happened to Princeton, and they've taken over almost all of our universities. And, you know, if you are a conservative, you're not going to be allowed to get a PhD, or at least if you do, it's going to be very, very rare. You're almost going to have to keep your views to yourself until you get graduated, you get into a college, you get tenure. Because if you certainly were to suggest that you are a Christian, that you don't believe in evolution, that you have, you know, you believe, you don't believe in socialism, you're going to have a hard time getting a job anywhere in major university in the United States today. That's what's known as academic freedom to suppress the truth.
And you know what? I was very fortunate to have the teacher that I had, and I'm very thankful. And he knew that I was a Christian. And he called me up after class one day, and he says, Chris, and I said, yes, sir. He says, you know what? He says, you're one of my best students. He says, you're one of my top students. He says, I've had you for just about every history class. He says, I already know what you like. He says, you like American history, don't you? And I said, yes, I do. I said, because if we don't know our history, I said, you know what? I said, this country's in trouble. You know, he agreed with me.
Well, anyway, God bless you, and thank you so very much. I hope you'll call again sometime.
I will, sir.
Good night. God bless. Okay, well, that was Chris from Michigan, and I assume, of course, in her attitude in class, her teacher knew that she was a Christian. I do hope that, of course, when you encounter others, why people would recognize that you are different, that you, of course, are a Christian. Christians should be different. I would hope that if I was ever put on trial, that, you know, to determine whether I was a Christian, there'd be enough evidence to convict me. Anyway, of course, we have Rich calling from Utica, New York. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Rich. How are you doing?
How you doing, Dr. Stan? I'm fine.
I'm doing just fine. How are you listening to us? You hearing us on this radio station up there in Utica?
Loud and clear. Excellent.
Good. I'm so glad.
The reason why I called, I was listening to this station earlier in the day, and they were talking about the progress that our government's been making on the North American Union, Mexico, mm-hmm. United States, and Canada.
Right.
And the progress that they mentioned was they're actually building a American Mexican highway.
Right.
Is that actually true?
Yes, they are building it. They're in the process of condemning property today to turn it over to a Spanish company. I think it's called Central.
Right, exactly.
And of course, but this is simply part of a long-range plan that, of course, the highway will extend through Texas, and then it's going to go up to Kansas City, and then it's going to go on up there into Canada, and it will begin to unite, of course, all three countries, Mexico, United States, and Canada. But it's being used then to bring in products from communist China or other third world countries to undercut our industries and bypass the major ports in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Seattle, which are controlled by the longshoremen. Of course, it'd be much cheaper actually to have these ships offloaded in Mexico and then put these containers onto trucks and take them right up into Kansas, and from there they'll be disseminated across the United States and then north into Canada. Yes, this is underway. It doesn't really matter what the people want. In Texas, the legislature voted, I don't know, 150-2, something like that, in opposed to the highway. And then, of course, they sent it to the governor. He did not, he vetoed this. And then, of course, they disbanded the legislature. They won't meet again for 2 years. It doesn't matter how the legislature feels. It doesn't matter how the people of Texas feel. And over 90% do not want the NAFTA highway put in. But you see, there is an elite group that really is dedicated to the destruction of the sovereignty of the United States and bringing about this consolidation of the three nations in the northern hemisphere, probably down the line we'll take in some of the countries in Central America. Right at the present time, of course, in South America, why, Brazil is establishing a one bank for half a dozen countries down there and a uniform currency, and they're uniting all their currencies in Argentina and Chile and three or four other countries there in South America. So this is what they're doing, is building these trade and financial blocks throughout the world, with the idea that later on they would unite them all into the one world government. It's part of a long-range plan, and everybody's playing their part, whether it's Hugo Chavez or this fellow who's the Marxist leader of Brazil, or certainly our leaders here. They have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is the idea of the world government, and until people understand that, they can't understand anything going on. They call it treason when, of course, you swear to uphold the Constitution and then do everything you can to undermine it. But who are you going to report them to? The government?
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. That leads to my biggest concern is, and it sounds like, seeing how this is all in play right now, they're building it right now, really it sounds to me like there's nothing we can do.
There's a great deal
we can do. And protect our little families somewhere in the mountains.
Well, Ritz, you can do that. You can run off and try to hide, but you really can't run away from this because eventually it'll permeate every aspect of our society. You can go, if you've never seen that movie, wonderful movie, Dr. Zhivago, and there the communist revolution, and Zhivago tries to go off with his girlfriend and live out in the middle of the Russian tundra there. But they eventually track him down, and there's no place really in the world where we're safe. Any place you go, they will follow you, they will track you, they have the ability, if you have a cell phone, not only to find out where you are, even though the cell phone's turned off, even to listen to your telephone conversations when the telephone's turned off. The technology they have today is truly amazing. But this is a spiritual battle we're engaged in, and there are powerful spiritual forces at work, and we are called, at least I'm called, to try to get the information out with the hope that as things get worse and worse and worse, that people will eventually begin to recognize the true spiritual nature of this battle and will rise up in righteousness and just refuse to go along with these wicked people who are intent upon destroying the freedom of the people here living in the United States.
It looks quite bleak, Doctor, I must say that, especially when you see how our society is moving. It doesn't look like we're moving towards God and his principles. It looks like we're becoming exactly what some of these other nations hold us up as.
You're absolutely right, Rich. Things do look pretty bleak, but look at it the other way. Things are always darkest before the dawn. We do not know what's going to happen, and this is not your battle, it's not my battle, it's God's battle, and we want to be on his side, and we're not called to win, we're called to do our best. So, you know, if I could leave you with that, have you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or heard my talk on the Forbidden Secret, or our talk on the planned police state?
No, I haven't, actually. I just wrote down your website, so I'll be going on to the website and seeing what I can get. I've pretty much been reading the Bible.
Well, I think reading the Bible is very important, and you're going to have to be very close to God and the times that lie ahead, because we're going to be moving into very difficult times. But also, I believe...
One last note. I don't know if you're familiar with Gary Allen and his book, None Dare Call Conspiracy.
I knew Gary, right?
Oh, yeah, I spoke to him on a radio show back in the 80s.
Right.
He's
great American.
Yeah, and he predicted all this.
Right.
You know, in his book, he said this would happen, and nobody believed it then.
Well, I think that right now we are in a very fortunate position, because when times are good, people really won't listen to people like you and me, but when times turn bad, people are going to be looking for solutions. And we've got to be there with the facts and point people in the right direction. Of course, the first thing we have to do is try to lead them to the Lord, and then, of course, we can hope that they'll join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure.
Well, those are the words I wanted to hear, and God bless you, Stan.
And you too, Rich.
Thank you for your time.
And please keep on listening and encourage other people up there in Utica to listen if you'd like. If you order anything from us, ask for a few cards. You can pass them out to people up there. If we get them listening to the Internet or the shortwave, once they get to our website, of course, they'll have access to all of the various means we have of reaching people. We can reach anybody in the world. We've just got to get them to want to listen.
Yes, sir, and thank you again.
You're welcome, and God bless. Bye-bye. All right, that was Vince calling from Utica, New York. Our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I opened, of course, the talk today with that wonderful poem in Flanders Field, written by Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae, who was an orthopedic surgeon. And, of course, since I was an orthopedic surgeon, I've had a feeling of kinship with him. But he concluded his poem by saying this: "Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw. The torch be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields." And, of course, everybody has missed the implications of what that is. Take up our quarrel with the foe. Well, who was the foe? Was it the German soldiers who were fighting? The Italian soldiers who were fighting? Oh, you know, of course, if you read the Kaiser's memoirs, he will tell you that he thought that there was a secret society. The Masons were behind the war. And, of course, that's Kaiser Wilhelm's memoirs. And, of course, he also pointed out that the British had intensely incited the war. And he was actually right in both cases. But what everybody has missed is that the people who led Great Britain at that time had come from Cecil Rhodes' secret society, the one that was formed in 1891. And, of course, they had come out of Masonry. They were all involved in the occult. Well, of course, there was a reply to Flanders Field. There were many other poems that were written in response to that. One of my favorites is this: "In Flanders fields the cannons boom, and fitful flashes light the gloom, while up above, like eagles fly, the fierce destroyers of the sky, with stains the earth wherein you lie is redder than the poppy bloom in Flanders field. Sleep on, ye brave, the shrieking shell, the quaking trench, the startling yell, the fury of the battle hell shall wake you not, for all is well. Sleep peacefully, for all is well. Your flaming torch aloft we bear, with burning heart and oath we swear, to keep the faith, to fight it through, to crush the foe, or sleep with you in Flanders fields." And, of course, those are beautiful words, ladies and gentlemen, but the First World War was the lead to the Second World War, which was the lead to the Korean War, which was the lead to the Vietnam War, which is the lead us to the current war we're involved in. Another no-win war. And we're not trying to win the war. Our bodies are fighting valiantly, but they're not allowed to win. And if you really doubt that, I want you to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, and pull down the December 2007 newsletter. It's basically the speech was given by Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who commanded the coalition forces from June of 2003 to June of 2004. And there, of course, General Sanchez says, we were not allowed to win. We were blocked from winning. Read that and weep. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And let's go to the Jeannie. Hi, Jeannie. How are we doing?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
It's good. It's good to know you're back safe and sound.
Oh, I'm always safe.
All right, fine. Well, and you're always sound, too, so go ahead.
I hope so. Let's see. When I was out of the country, I had time to sit down and listen to the miniseries. It's a five-part called America, with a K. And that was on television only once, and the government pulled it. That was in 1987. That was actually put out by the good faction of the CIA. And they also had a paperback a book that had the script to America. And, of course, I bought those a couple years ago. I bought about 20 of those paperbacks, because the government pulled that script, too. And as I was watching it, five-part series, what really was interesting is the NAFTA superhighway will divide the United States in half. It's like breaking it up. And, of course, we have all the infrastructure in that NAFTA superhighway, the telecommunication cables, gas, oil, water lines, so they do have to be protected. So So they will probably be guarded by troops or other entities. But what was interesting, the first group of five states that seceded from the United States was the Middle West, and it was called Heartland. And they had their own anthem, and the governor was called Governor General of Heartland. And so here again I see it coming to fruition, this wonderful movie. And you can sometimes get it on Amazon.com. I bought my original one, about 5 years ago. It cost about $150. But one interesting thing regarding this mini-series called America, we had occupation troops, Russian occupation troops in America. And you've heard Dennis Cuddy talk about the world map and where the foreign troops are going to be situated. Well, I'm looking at it now, and the southern United States will be occupied by the Russian troops. In Northern California, it'll be the Irish troops. And where the American troops will be is where they're right now, in the Mideast.
Well, hang on, we'll be back in just a moment. We lost Linda Cosling from Washington State. If she'd like to call back, we'd love to hear from her. Right here at Radio Liberty. Jeannie, go right ahead.
And this world map, it was republished in 1960, and it was by the National Economic Council of New York. And you can actually go online on the Internet and see the map. So it's very interesting where the foreign troops will be stationed after we come into this regional world government. And we will have no more local input into, say, the city council or the board of supervisors. It will be all appointed people in the regional government. This is an extremely interesting movie, and I do have to applaud the brave men in intelligence of putting this out. It's very thought-provoking, but it goes into the psychology of what was happening in the United States before the occupation of the Russian troops.
Well, I think it's so important. I think it's a very, very good movie, and certainly it's called America with a K. Is that right?
Right, yeah.
We're going to have to let you go because we got another caller.
Okay, Dr. Stan.
Anyway, God bless. And who is the producer and the copyright date of that, do you recall?
It was Pounds, and I'll let you know later. I don't have it right.
All right, God bless, and thanks so much, Jeannie. I'm glad you're back safe.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Linda, who's calling from Washington. Hi, Washington. Linda, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. A little confused.
All right, go ahead.
I have a problem with why are people being so blind in our nation today?
I believe there's a spiritual blindness out there. I believe that their minds have been conditioned by the dark side, and they're not seeing things. And you try to tell them what's going on, they look at you with this blank stare. But what we need to do, of course, is just keep telling them, because when things get bad enough, they're going to be coming to you and asking, how did it happen?
It's all in His Word.
I know. You're absolutely right.
And we've been
right.
Trying to tell them about it forever, and they keep saying, oh, that's been prophesied. They've been saying that for years.
And that's absolutely true, but of course it's like the boy who called wolf, but eventually the wolf came. And if you read the scriptures, and then you, in fact, we've got a wonderful series we're probably going to be offering simply about prophecy. And when you see how all of these prophecies are being fulfilled every single day, there's no way this could have happened by chance. You have to see the hand of God in everything that's unfolding in the Middle East today, certainly in the coming world food shortage, the new diseases that are sweeping the world. It's just like you're reading Revelation
6. It's not just in the world, it's right here.
Right. Hey, we're out of time. Linda, God bless, and thank you so much, and call a little earlier next week.
I will.
All right, God
bless.
Thank you. And that was Linda, of course, calling from Washington State, and don't be frustrated when people don't listen. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We had Linda calling us from Washington State, and she was just pointing out that a lot of people don't want to hear the message we have. And she says if people would only read the Bibles, they would understand what's going on. The trouble is that so many of our ministries and our churches don't preach prophecy. Oh, no, we want to talk about other things. We want, of course, to grow our church. We don't want to be controversial. Well, I think you have to understand the prophecies, and they are coming to pass today. And you read Revelation 6:8, and of course, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and Hades followed close behind, and power was given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world with a sword, that means war, and with pestilence, that means disease, and with famine, and that's the famine that's coming and already beginning to spread throughout the world. And for the beasts of this world. Well, we're in difficult times and yet exciting times for those of us who know the Lord personally. Well, this is the time, of course, we need to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're positioned to help, we do hope you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and of course, get our books. If you can't afford to support us, direct people to our internet site, RadioLiberty.com, where they can listen to our programs live 4 hours a day, certainly archived 3 hours a day, MP 3 hours a day. They can listen to our live feed to the satellite 9 hours a day, and when they're not hearing us, well, they'll hear Joyce Riley or Chris Meyer or Pastor Butch Palm. We have a satellite feed. If you get yourself an inexpensive satellite dish and listen, and there's no charge once you have it set up, a wonderful means of reaching people. So tell others about our programs at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, where it can be heard on shortwave, on the internet, certainly on satellite, and then on many radio stations, which we buy time on, most of them. But if you know a station that would pull us down, talk to the station manager and let us know, and we'll be glad to talk to him. We do hope many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because it is an introduction to the spiritual battle that's taking place. If you've not yet heard my talk on the Forbidden Secret, it's a DVD, and then there's a syllabus that goes with that we recommend. There's a talk called The Planned Police State. That's the Planned Police State, and the syllabus that goes with that. We recommend the DVDs on They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. That's They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3 hour, the 4 hour, the 10 hour version. And I promise you, if you watch those, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again or listen to rock music as you did before. And even a lot of the music that's in the church is of the rock type, and it comes from the same basic source as that is listened to by our young people. It comes right from the pit of hell. And they've infiltrated our churches, and they've changed our music. And, of course, leaving us open for communion with the dark spirits. And then, of course, we hope that you want to get the DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, certainly the Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. All of these things available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. And then, of course, if you're interested in UFOs, we've got the one that's put out by our good friend Bob Fletcher called Government Secrecy, UFOs. Now, he thinks they're from outer space. I believe they're demonic. I don't think there's any question they're demonic. But certainly you'll get a great deal of information about the fact that UFOs are not imaginary. They're very real. But I believe they're a manifestation of the other dimension. Weather modifications. Have you noticed how many tornadoes there are in the Middle West? We've got a wonderful book called Weather Warfare. We've got a 4-tape set on weather modification. We've got a great DVD on weather modification, once again put out by Bob Fletcher. But very, very accurate, and there's no question. They have the ability to modify the weather, to put storms and, of course, to create new diseases. And if you doubt that, of course, we have the pages from Zygmunt Brzezinski's book back in 1970, where he talked about how they could begin to produce storms. And, well, we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. It's going to determine what the future will bring, and I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Carolyn Busenhart, who's running for the Board of Supervisors in the first electoral district here in Santa Cruz County, where I live. And of course, if you're living out across America, you're saying, why would you want to put somebody on a nationwide, really an international program who's running for a local supervisor? And that's because, first of all, there is a slogan for the people on the other side. Think globally, but act locally. And all across America, the people who would establish a fascist society run people for the fire board, for the water board, for the city councils, and certainly for the boards of supervisors. And if somebody gets in who's not one of their people, they will make their life miserable. Of course, they have the control of the local newspapers, and the newspapers ordinarily always support the wrong people and the wrong propositions. Well, Carolyn, of course, is somebody I've known, well, I guess for the better part of 45 years. She used to come to meetings I put on 45 years ago. At that time, she was just a little wisp of a thing. Of course, we've all changed since those days. But Carolyn has never changed her views of being concerned about what's happening to our society. And of course, really the issues that we face in our region are similar to the regions, the problems that are faced throughout the nation, the water problems, the traffic problems, the idea that they want to expand the control of the local government over every aspect of life as we move from freedom towards fascism. Because, of course, what is fascism but a bureaucracy that controls the people and totally ignores our Constitution? And with that as a background, Carolyn, thank you so much for being with us.
Dan, thank you so much for having me on this evening. I really enjoy it. It's been a long time since I've talked to you.
Well, of course, this will be rebroadcast again tomorrow, at least in our area from 5 to 6 on the drive time. So a lot of people will hear what you're going to say tonight. So
good. Why
are you going to run for Board of Supervisors? Now, I know why you're running, but I want you to tell our listeners.
First of all, I ran twice before for the same office against the incumbent who is no longer running. She is retiring after this term. And I ran twice before because I thought she was doing a bad job, and I still think she's done a bad job for the area. But, the first district that we're in is a very unique part of our county, and it has several microcosms of neighborhoods. It has the Summit, it has Soquel, it has Santa Cruz Gardens, it has Live Oak, it has Pleasure Point, and it has Branch of 40, De La Viega, Carbonera, Pasatiempo. You know, and that's just to name a few in the unincorporated area, but there's parts of the city of Santa Cruz, too, and Capitola. And the needs are as diverse as the neighborhoods are. However, the basic needs are the same. People want government to stay out of their lives and businesses, to maintain our infrastructure, and to protect us from the people who want to do us harm. And they have not been protecting us from the people who want to do us harm, and they have not maintained our infrastructure. As you well know, the roads are in terrible shape here. And we, each one of us, pay $56.40 a parcel, that any parcel that is developed in this unincorporated area of the county, we pay $56.40 to maintain our roads. And what are they doing with the money, Stan, because our roads are not maintained?
What are they doing with the money, Carolyn?
Right. I don't know. They're actually giving huge retirements and extra bonuses to the county employees, and our bloated bureaucracy there is terrible.
My understanding is we have the second largest planning commission anywhere in the entire state of
California. But that's not the planning commission, and that's one of the things that I said 16 years ago, is we in Santa Cruz County in California, we are the second smallest county. San Francisco is smaller than us, and there are Sitiana County. And at that point in time, we had the largest planning department, second largest planning department, second to Los Angeles.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, I think it's important that people understand that our county was targeted many years ago by the Marxists when they brought the University of California in here. And they used the university, and they, of course, used all sorts of chicanery to, of course, take over control of the local governments. It was simply where they were going to use their experiments on the people, and, of course, to see how much control they could have. And, of course, there are people who like power over other people's lives, who want to be able to tell them how to live and what to do, and that's really what Marxism is all about. And that's what we really have here in our region, is a Marxist society, a bureaucracy that is answerable to no one. But go right ahead, Carolyn.
Well, you know, when candidates, on that same thing, is when candidates offer you great things for nothing, you know, you've got to remember that when government gives somebody something, they have to first take it from someone else. And you were talking about the Marxists, et cetera, and what happens, actually, is a lot of these people are so dedicated. They go to meetings 6-7 nights a week, and none of us, the rest of us, sit back on our laurels and do nothing. And you're just going to do a bunch of complaining and really don't do a lot about anything. But the Marcus crowd would really like to see us all basically living in naturally occurring caves and just laying barefoot and walking through and eating the leaves and the fruit and those fallen from the trees, because they really hate the society that we have. They really don't like it. They don't want it, except they're kind of hypocritical because they also enjoy the benefits of the society. And they also have a lot of things themselves, so they are very hypocritical.
Well, I think it's really very interesting for anybody who really wants to know what they really are planning. They published something back about 1991 called Agenda 21 Santa Cruz.
Right.
And it is the most incredible document. They want to
really want to take us over.
They want to actually get people out of their cars. They want to tear up the highways. They want to, they said they want to use water to control us. They want to control every aspect of our where we live. They want to get us out of our homes and get us into places where they can control us.
Well, as I said, they want us to live in naturally occurring caves. They want us out of our homes.
Right.
They don't want any of us to have anything.
But it's amazing that they would actually publish something like that. It is available through our ministry at Radio Liberty. It's called Agenda 21 Santa Cruz. Well worthwhile reading.
They can order it and get it from you, Stan, because they really don't know what's happening. Most people are not aware, and when they hear about Agenda 21, they say, oh, that's just that nut person out there. And nothing like that is really happening. But they talk about sustainability and stuff, and what they mean, you and I think of sustainability as something that is good for society, yet these people use the word sustainable, and they really want it to be reversed back to what it was back in the caveman's days, basically. They do not want us to have society that is a progressive society. They call themselves progressive, but they are not really the true meaning of progressive. You and I know the true meaning of progressives is progress. We have new business, we have...
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just a moment here.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Carolyn Busenhardt with us. She's talking about the people who took over control of our county here 30 years ago. They call themselves progressive, but they're really not progressive. They're regressive. They want to stop progress. They have blocked development of our highways and our freeways. We're having some development now, but only after 30 years, and they've blocked it. So we basically got a great big wide road for a few miles, and then that'll narrow right on down again. Nothing is going to have changed. They have fought any effort to do what was logical and proper. They're giving permits for massive development of low-cost housing, really intense, bringing in lots more homes here. Whereas, of course, they originally got into power promising not to allow growth in the county. We've had literally uncontrolled growth, but they will allow growth only where they want it to. If you have a beautiful piece of land, you want to develop it, you can't do that because they want everything into green zones. They want to take away people's property and property rights. They want to control every aspect of human endeavor. And they do it because they have the power of government, and that's why I think Carolyn Busenhardt is running. She wants, of course, to give the people an opportunity to be free rather than under the control of an oppressive bureaucracy. Go ahead with the story there, Carolyn.
You know, one of the things that's very interesting when you're talking about the regressive part, and they want us all, they've stopped us through growth. And what's interesting is way back when, I can't remember the year it was now, Measure J was passed, which was actually supposedly the anti-growth measure. And it was supposed to just slowly grow, and yet our county has really grown like crazy, and including the first district has had massive growth in there. But what's interesting also in the Measure J was this affordable housing, which meant that if you are going to develop five houses or more, you have to give one of those to affordable housing. So So the people that are buying those other four have to pay more for their houses because the one got it for cheaper. And I think that is something that we should bring back to the people as an initiative. And even if I don't get elected, I hope the heck I get elected, but if I don't, I think I'm going to start an initiative process that actually will revisit Measure J and take that out of there, because that has done nothing but cause housing to go up in value. And it's something that needs to be taken back. But also at the same time, that was when the second book of county codes was developed, and that's the land use and planning codes. And it's actually bigger than the first book of county codes. There are so many restrictions on building and on planning and on logging. If you have property that you want to log, you can't do it. And, you know, every candidate always talks about streamlining the planning process. And what that means for me is to have some kind of a citizens panel. And I've talked to you about this before, Stan, 16 years ago when I first ran. Nobody has really streamlined the planning. They talk about streamlining planning. They're talking about the planning department. It's not the planning department per se that's the problem. It is the planning rules, the second book of county codes. We need some kind of a citizen panel to go through the whole section of county codes that pertain to land use, ordinance, and policies. And we need to actually, and somebody says you shouldn't use this expression, throw the baby out with the bathwater, because the baby's good and the bathwater's bad. But some of them maybe that make, some one person might think is good and another one won't. We need to actually just literally get rid of some of those policies. We need to change them and be less restrictive on people. We need to be able to allow people to use their land. We need to be able to allow people to build something on their land if they want to do it. And I also think that the planning department and the building department need to be separate. They were years ago. My mom used to work in the building department. I know it was separate than the planning, and then along came Gary Patton, and they combined the two into one, and that's when the big quagmire came along, where if you go in to get a house permit for a house, it's going to take you weeks before you get your permit. In the old days when my mom worked there, there was one person, Stan, and it was her, and she would check over the plans and make sure they were up to the Uniform Building Code, and you might get your permit the same afternoon if she wasn't so bogged down with all the other people. Otherwise, you might have to wait till overnight, and she'd even bring plans home and check them off to make sure that the person could get their permit the next day. And it's ridiculous that we have the two departments combined, and it takes you weeks to get a simple addition. If you want to add one room to your house, it takes you weeks to go through the whole process.
But, of course, then you have to have an environmental impact study. And you have
That's absolutely ridiculous.
And you have to have all these other studies, you know. An environmental impact study, I remember we were, many years ago, we put out a room to our home, and this thing, I think, cost me $3,000 or $4,000. It was simply basically written from a format. They simply had it on the computer. They changed the names, put it in, and charged it $3,000 or $4,000.
But even worse than that, Stan, is they charge you, if you want to go in and you want to maybe change the use of your property, or you want to get a variance, or you want to do something, you have to pay tens of thousands of dollars up front for them to review it. They may not even give you the permit, and they keep the money.
I know. Really, what's happened,
change
of course...
Change the name and charge you $3,000 for it.
But, of course, what we have, unfortunately, is a situation where you have favoritism. And if you are one of the people who's in with the people in the Planning Commission, why, of course, you're going to get your permits. And if you're not in with them, they will make your life a living hell.
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do.
And, of course, but the thing... Favoritism, this is not made by, rules. It is simply the opinions of the people who work there for the government, who have a position of power. And power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts.
Absolutely. It's absolutely ludicrous that the way that the county has become. The other thing that it's become is a huge, bloated bureaucracy. I actually couldn't believe this editorial in the paper three months ago. And it actually talked about growth in the county, and it said that, in a down economy like we have now, that a private sector growth and jobs went 2.6% growth. And that was really good for a down economy, right? But then they looked further, and for our local government, that includes the county, the cities, the university, and all that, local governments on the whole, you know what it grew by? 12.6%, Stan. And state government grew by 9.8%, and that is disgusting.
Well, all I can say is, Chris, with this downturn, they're talking about having to lay off a fair number of people. A couple of hundred, 250, 280 people are may very well be let go. And even though I really empathize with them and anybody losing their job at times like these, we've got to cut back on government. We've got to cut back on the city government, on this, the county government, on the state government, or they will bankrupt us all. And of course, Sydney, they've made sure that they're going to get great pensions. They've got better pensions than the people who are paying their salaries. They've got better health care than the people who are paying their salaries. They get all sorts of benefits that the common people, the average person, doesn't. I think that the people who work for us should be our servants. They're not. They're our masters, and they're well rewarded. They make sure that they're well rewarded so that we can maintain this authoritarian system.
Right, and they actually think they're entitled to it, Stan. And what really gets me, if you go down to the county, any one of the departments down there, with the exception of election and a couple of others, you walk in and the people are just sitting there and they slowly get up. They like you're bothering them to come to wait on you at the counter. It's absolutely disgusting. But there's also ways to trim employees by just not hiring more when somebody retires or somebody goes away. And, you know, what's interesting is a lot of these jobs that they have to cut, when you always hear county and state government and city government talking about cutting jobs, what they're actually cutting is what they term as on-filled positions. Every one of these departments have their budget, let's say you have a county office and it's got sessioned out for 30 employees. But they ask what they budget for is 30 employees, but they actually only have 20. So they always say, oh, we're so short, we're short those 10 employees. They don't really need them anyway, but it becomes the county's slush fund. It becomes the department's slush fund for them to actually use money that they have budgeted for employees that they don't have. And that's what they usually cut most of the time, are these on-field positions. So they're not doing an awful lot of cutting for the real people that are positioned. I just picked up the county's proposed budget the other day because it just became available, so we got it on Monday. And it was ready, I think, last Friday for the people to pick up. You have to pay $10 to get it, but I've been getting it for 40-some-odd years every year, and then I get the final budget. And what's interesting, when county or government, I should say government, not just county, when government talks about a cut, what they're actually talking about is a cut off of what they say is the budget. The budget is not last year's spending. The budget is, like, I'll just use simple terms. Last year, my spending was $1,000. I'm making my budget for next year. So I make my budget for $2,000. And I find out, oh my, lo and behold, I can only get a hold of $1,500. So I go out and cry to the whole world that I had to cut my budget by $500. I had to cut my budget. That's terrible. I can't spend $500. Oh, times are terrible. I can only spend $1,500 instead of $2,000. When what did I actually do? I increased my spending from last year by $500. Nobody ever really looks when they talk about, oh, the budget this, the budget that. It's the same at local government, state government, and federal government. What they cut, Stan, is from a proposed budget. They don't cut from last year's spending. Anytime, anywhere. And that's exactly what's happening now. They do actually have less money coming in, probably. And I think it's good because maybe they will, in fact, actually really have to do some cutting. I haven't seen it yet. I've seen a couple dollars here and there, but it's nothing big. And, you know, I don't know if the people out here really know it or not, but the retirements of our county are absolutely ridiculous. You have the sheriffs and the fire to now are getting what they call three, at 50, 50. What 3 at 50 means is at age 50, a sheriff can retire, and he can get 3% for every year that he's worked. He gets 3% of his retiring salary for every year that he worked. So if he went to work at age 20 for the sheriff's department, and at age 50 he's had 30 years in, he gets 90%, Stan, of his retiring salary for the rest of his life. That's absolutely ludicrous. This whole country is going to be going broke paying those kind of retirements.
And, of course, the thing is, he can go out and get another job, and then, of course, he gets Social Security on that, and this is what a lot of them do.
Most of them even come back to the sheriff's department and work in the jail and other things part-time. And what's interesting is, you know, one department wants something and the other one gets it. And the sheriffs used to be lower. It was like 2.5%, 2%, and 1%, and it's worked its way up to 3%. And now the rank and file worker, who was getting the last one about several years ago, was 2% at 55. That's just the secretaries or whoever that work at the county, the rank and file people. Now, their negotiations, they got 2.5% at 55. So
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Carolyn, of course, what you're pointing out, I'm sure, is absolutely true. We see what's happened up in Vallejo, and Vallejo is filing for bankruptcy.
They
why?
Should, and they are. Because
75% of their salary was going to pay for the police and firemen and the retirement. Now, of course, the reason, of course, they had such a large retirement was because they used their union to elect people onto the county of board of supervisors should give them the raises. I do not believe that government employees should have a union and should be able to use their power to elect people who will give them more money because, of course, they're just stealing it from us common taxpayers.
Well, so I went to the sheriff's department forum that they had. There was only three of us. Not all five candidates went there. But anyway, as I basically sat there and I told the sheriffs, I really believe in the sheriffs. I believe we need a stronger presence. We need to actually have more punishment and on, which I'll talk to you about in a second, too. But I did tell them, but you guys, you cannot buy my vote. And basically, anybody that says, I'm going to give you everything you want, and now these people are going to go out and work for them, they're buying their vote. Like one of the candidates, John Leopold, he actually got the endorsement of the SEIU, which is the County Employees Union, and a couple of the other unions. And he had a couple of weeks ago 50 people out walking his precincts. They're going to get him elected, and you know what's going to happen when he's in office, if he gets in office? When they want a negotiated contract, he's going to give it to them right away. He's going to give them everything they want because they bought his vote. And nobody can buy my vote ever. No way, no how. And I am a person that works for the average person out here, union or non-union in the private sector. I don't care what it is, but that's the people I represent. And nobody in public office that I would be voting on their salaries or benefits could ever buy my vote.
But, of course, I don't believe, of course, we should allow that sort of thing to happen because, of course, I remember, of course, when this happened in Uruguay. I remember 50 years ago, 45 years ago, Malin McPherson, whose family owned the local newspaper, was telling me how wonderful things were in Uruguay. And, of course, there you could work for a company for 10 years, and you could retire at half pay, and you could then go to work for another company in 10 years, retire at half pay, and then another company for 10 years, retire at half pay, and all these people had so much money, and everybody was prosperous, and then the country went bankrupt, and of course everybody lost everything.
Of course they went bankrupt, because you can't sustain paying that kind of money out of our pockets. I mean, we'd have to give them, 90% of every penny we make so that they could sustain that for the retirement of all these people? And besides that, nobody should be allowed to retire at age 50 or 55. That is just way too young. People are still productive after that, and the people know they are because they go out and get other jobs, but they're just ripping off and raping the taxpayers of the county and the cities and the state when they want that much money at age 50 or 55 to retire. That is just way, way too young.
Well, unfortunately, Carolyn, people are basically greedy. And people want, of course, to get as much as they possibly can. And I don't care what group it is. They'll want to use the power of government so that they can have an advantage of other people.
I'm going to recite something to you if I can remember it. And it's Tocqueville's quote, and I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've said it all, so I'm going to close my eyes while I say it. No, I hope I get it right. But it's the historian Alexis Tocqueville quoted more than a century ago that this experiment in self-governing, which we call the United States, would survive only until the majority of people discovered that they could vote themselves largesse from the public purse. In other words, when they learned to elect politicians who would give them, who would empty someone else's pockets and give the stolen money to them.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Carolyn. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carolyn was simply quoting de Tocqueville. Would you like to give that quotation again? Because I think it's so important. De Tocqueville was a French philosopher who came to America somewhere around 1840, and he wrote a book called on democracy. He came to America from France to find out why our revolution had succeeded, and France had gone from one chaotic situation to another. Remember, we had a revolution in 1776 and established America. France had a revolution in 1789. Of course, they destroyed the existing government. They decapitated the king. They hung all the priests and they confiscated all the land of the Catholic Church. They were going to create a utopia, and within 10 years they were living in a dictatorship under Napoleon Bonaparte, and it was revolution. They had about two or three revolutions from 1789 up until 1840, when de Tocqueville came to America, and he wanted to find out why we were different. And why don't you give that quotation there?
I'll start it from the beginning again, if I can remember it all, but Alexis Tocqueville quoted that, Alexis Tocqueville, this historian Alexis Tocqueville quoted that more than a century ago, that this great experiment in self-governing, which we call the United States, would survive only until the majority of people discovered they could vote themselves largesse from the public purse. We have elected far too many such and allowed them to seduce us into believing we are entitled to a share of someone else's money. That was at the end of it. I left out a lot of the middle. Anyway, it's like when they pick somebody's pocket and they give the stolen money to them, and it's like feeding at the public tax trough. But we have definitely elected far too many of these people, Stan, and we've allowed them to seduce us into believing we are entitled to a share of someone else's money. And we aren't now, and we aren't ever. So I didn't remember the whole quote. You could actually go to vernonsplace.com, I think it is, and it's on there. You can put anything you want in front of vernonsplace.com, and you can get the quote. He has it on that one, Alexaville's quote, because it is a great quote. It's great, but I can't remember the whole part of it. I'm sorry, everybody out there. But, you know, back to the county. As we recently, as you well know, we've had an accelerated rate. It's like an exponential rate of gang activity in this county. And we've had a couple of stabbings on our major street here in Soquel and in Live Oak. Those are two areas within the first district for the listening audience that are not in this community. And we have horrible things going on. We have graffiti everywhere, and it's just gangs everywhere. And most of it is done by illegal aliens, which is a whole other subject that we could deal with. But what I say for a long time is we need to have harsher penalties for gang violence. And I've been saying this for years. I talked one day when I was at a Republican function up in Sacramento, and Dick Wilson was the governor at the time, and Dan Lundgren was our attorney general. And I got Dan aside, and I said, Dan, why can't we use the RICO Act on some of these guys and these gangs and everything? And he said, oh, we could, but we're working on that. Well, I haven't seen it yet, and I've been saying for years that we need to use the RICO Act. And the RICO is the Racketeering Influence and Corruption Act. And they've used it against the Aryan Brothers in jail and outside, and they've used it against the mafia. We could also do it against these gangs, and a lot of these gangs are affiliated with the Mexican prison gangs, the MS or M-something 13 or 14.
MS-13,
they're associated with them because the graffiti all over town says it. And if they're not, then they need to be spanked, and just tell them you don't fool around with something like that. If they're just trying to be funny, it's not funny, because MS-13 is a really serious, horrible gang that's in prisons. But anyway, we need to have harsher penalties for gang violence and gang members. And I say if a gang member is a minor, we also need to penalize the family of the gang members. And it's about time parents take responsibility for their children. You know, we have a whole bunch of gangbangers out there terrorizing people, and nobody's doing anything about it. You know, we need to start using the RICO Act against all known gang members, and you need to get the feds involved with it. And you need to get the feds involved with HUD and take away subsidized housing from the parents if they can't control their children. You know, when any crime is committed by a gang member or by a gang, if one gang member does a crime, if they're affiliated with the whole gang is just as guilty, because what they're out there doing is making a statement for that gang. And they need to get the maximum penalty. We need to be really, really tough on crime. And everybody else, all the other candidates say, well, we need programs for them. They don't have enough to do. There's just no program for youth or anything in Live Oak. And then when they're in Soquel, when the candidates are, they all pander to the crowd, too, that they're speaking to. If they're in Soquel, oh, there's no youth program here. There's no youth program in Live Oak, and all these youth programs will take care of it. Well, it's not. You know, and like one of the candidates other than me says, well, we need to bring the Boy Scouts back. I can just see these gangbangers that wear their pants and a crotch down at their knees going in and joining the Boy Scouts. It's just not going to happen. What we need to do is we need to catch them when they do any graffiti or when they do anything, or they're even wearing their colors. That's a sign of their act of terrorism when they're wearing them. We need to round them up, and we need to be tough on them. That's what has to happen. And the families, too, that allow this to happen, they also have to be penalized.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Out for me.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. I guess it's Carolyn Boosenhart, and go right ahead, Carolyn.
Well, you know, if there's any way that a crime is committed by a gang member or a gang, we need to do the maximum penalty needs to be imposed, and we need to also punish their parents, and then maybe, possibly, parents should start being responsible for their
children. But unfortunately, Carolyn, parents are not allowed to discipline their children. The school specifically outlaws spanking. The parents are not allowed to spank their children. If you are a parent and you were to grab your kid and shake them for something they've done, they could turn you in, and, of course, you'd be visited by the police.
Right.
What we need to do, of course, is get the government away from, you know, let parents discipline children like they should. We have very little child abuse by parents. We have an awful lot of child abuse by government, by schools. Train our children to do whatever you think. You know, they tell us that our children need more self-esteem. These kids got so much self-esteem, they have no self-respect, no self-restraint. What we need is to teach them that there's punishment for doing the wrong thing, and they're far better off to be punished in school or at homes rather than sent to prison where the ultimate punishment
is. That's right. That's basically what I'm talking about, is they need to learn that there's consequences for your actions.
Right. We ought to start in our schools, but we're not doing it in our schools. We ought to start in our churches. We're not doing it in our churches, and we're sure not doing it in the homes.
Well, the other thing that's really kind of interesting is when you talk about the kids not doing things in schools, way back when they used to have different shop classes and things in school, they're not even teaching kids now how to function in society when they get out of high school. They need to learn different things that they can function. These kids now, there was this thing on 60 Minutes a long time ago called the Millennial Generation, and they expect everybody owes them a living, basically, is what it was all about.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. That was actually replayed again this last Sunday on 60 Minutes. We'll be right back here. Oh, go right ahead. You got one more minute, Carolyn.
Oh, that's what, before the next break, you mean?
No, right. Go right ahead.
Oh, no. Well, you know, back to local stuff, though, there's talking in Santa Cruz about purchasing a railway that goes all the way through the whole county. I'm totally, totally against that. All it will do is use up money. It's a big, big boondoggle. They talk about using it for a bike path. They talk about it for a walking path. And they talk about making it for a passenger train. And it's just going to cost the county millions of dollars to purchase it. And it's going to be millions of dollars each year to keep it up. All it's going to be is another waste of money for the county when they do something like that. And for the bicycle rides, they have a huge bicycle advocacy group. This one guy who started this years ago called People Power, and he's gotten all these different people involved with it. Now that's his job. He works at People Power. He created a job for himself.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Carolyn Boosenhart here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carolyn Boosenhart. And Carolyn, certainly before we go on, I want you to get your webpage out and tell people how they can get in touch with you if they're interested in helping you.
Yes, my webpage is Carolyn, and then it's the number 4, not spelled out, not F-O-U-R. It's Carolyn, the number 4, supervisor.org. That's my webpage. And Vernon just printed out for me, Vernon's my husband, the whole Tocqueville quote, so I could read all that to you, too. But my webpage, it's really funny that you asked me that, Stan. Not once did I mention it. And in several of the candidate forums, every other thing I would say, I would mention to them. And don't forget my website is CarolynNumerical4Supervisor.org. And it got to the point where the audience would be laughing because I was saying it so often. But anyway, my website is CarolynFourSupervisor.org. And I appreciate it. I also, on it is PayPal, which is the PayPal account. You can directly deposit money into my account. You have to fill out something, though, that will tell me if you, because if you do anything over $100, you have to tell me if you're retired, if you're working, what kind of work you do. And if you own your own business, you have to put the name of your business down, because that's just required by our state Fair Political Practices Commission, that has to have that happen if the donation is over $100. But there's a direct PayPal account if anybody wants to donate any more money to my account so I can get more mailings out, or more radio ads would really be great. You want the Tocqueville quote in its entirety?
Sure, we wanted the Tocqueville quote. Go ahead.
Okay. In its entirety, the historian Alexis de Tocqueville quoted more than a century ago that this great experiment in self-governing, which we call the United States, would survive only until the American people discovered they could vote themselves largesse from the public purse. In other words, when they learned how to feed at the public tax trough by electing that breed of politician who would empty someone else's pockets via taxation and give the stolen money to them. We have elected far too many such and allowed them to seduce us into believing we are entitled to a share of someone else's money. We aren't, not now, not ever. And we were talking earlier about the entitlement. As the government employees really do feel that they are totally entitled to that kind of a retirement. The average person out here who works, the nurses, the secretaries, the you name it, all the different jobs out here, I can't even think of all the different jobs, no way in the world do they have that kind of a retirement. And even if you work up as the executives in the richest corporations, the lower-level executives do not have that kind of retirement. You yourself have... I've got to tell you another thing on this retirement. But I was going to say on the executives, you yourself have to put money in your 401k, and then the company sometimes will match it. But government, as a matter of fact, in our county, in the county of Santa Cruz, there's, for the retirement that they pay in, there's the portion of it that the county pays, and then there's a portion of it that the employee pays. But it's so wonderful, the employee's portion, the county also pays.
Isn't that nice?
So the county pays 100% of the retirement dollar going into the fund, so the employer pays nothing. In the private sector, whether you're in the union or not a union, you have to pay it all yourself.
Right.
It's absolutely ludicrous.
Well, of course, but this is what's wrong with the government. Of course, when you've got the people working for government who go out then, of course, to get the candidates elected who will give them more money, certainly it's the most normal thing in the world for people to actually try to get more money. And, of course, they don't understand that eventually the whole house of cards comes down. And I fear that a lot of these people, you know, who have a pension coming and they'll probably continue getting their pension, it just won't be worth anything. It'll be like it is in Zimbabwe today, where they have 1,000,000% inflation, and you can get you may get your pension, you know, $5,000 a month, but of course it costs you about $1 billion to buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
And let's go to, we've got Jeannie calling in. Do you want to take some calls from the audience?
Sure, of course.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Jeannie here. Go ahead, Jeannie. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
And then a question.
I can't hear.
Okay, go ahead.
This is one lady I really respect. Whatever she
says,
she means it. She carries through, and her persistence through the years and still going strong, it just amazes me. So, Carolyn,
thank you, Jeannie.
Thumbs up. I really respect you.
Thank you, Jeannie. I love it, too. I love you guys, too. We haven't seen you in a long time, but we think about you. We talk about you every once in a while.
Okay. I hear Vernon on the radio, too, your husband.
Yes, he's good.
He does have a show. I wanted you to explain to the audience what the Board of Supervisors just passed regarding taking away our Fourth Amendment to the Bill of Rights.
Oh, yeah, that's lovely. That's lovely. What the supervisors just passed, this has to do with accessory dwellings, and they used to call them granny units. But what it is now is if anybody wants to put on an accessory dwelling, they have looser standards now, and they might let you put it on. But what you sign away is your rights for a search and seizure, which is the Fourth Amendment, is what they can do at any time unannounced is they can come in and inspect your property to make sure, if you're going to build a shed, it's actually not the granny unit. If you're going to build an accessory dwelling that is not the granny unit, if you just want to build a little storage shed, they have the right to come in at any point in time to inspect your whole property to make sure that you're not renting that out for somebody to live in. So it's basically the right to search and seizure has been forfeited when you sign on to get your accessory dwelling. So in my opinion, all that's going to do is encourage more illegal building because people aren't going to go in and get that done. They're not going to get a permit for it when they can just do it without.
Yeah, it's just like signing your rights away when you go into court is the judge says, well, to get this accomplished, do you waive all your rights?
Right, you have the Constitution and Fourth Amendment in front of you. I don't right now.
I do.
Okay, read the Fourth Amendment then.
Okay.
It's very short, but I just want it read.
Right. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. That is the Fourth Amendment.
And I think what people have to understand, there really are fascists out there who feel the Constitution gets in the way of their doing what they want to do.
Yes.
And because they want to be able to take your property. They want to be able to inspect you. They want to be able to control you. They want to be able to fine you. These are people who are power hungry. Now, of course, we have some good employees working for government, but they're trapped in the system. But there are other people who have a different agenda. And of course,
interesting, Stan. Some people say, well, what can you, one person, do? You know, one person, if I'm the only one like that, you'll be the oddball on the court. But one thing that's interesting is the supervisors do bend to public pressure. One thing I have been able to do over the years is I can rally the troops out here. I can let these things be known publicly, what they're doing. I can ask people to all come. I can get the troops out here riled up, rallied up, and we can have 400 or 500 people showing up, and the other supervisors will bend.
All right. Oh, I hope you get some of those people out walking the precincts for you here in the next week or so. Jeannie, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we let you?
You know what, on walking the precincts, I don't like walking precincts. And you know why? People don't want to be disturbed in their homes. So I've been out handing out flyers every day at the supermarkets because I figure everybody goes to the supermarket. And I have two gals that have been really helping me, and they've just been great, the Waldron sisters. And they are just great without their going out there and helping me hand out flyers. And so many people have said it's wonderful to actually meet the candidate. You know, like the federal candidates go out to the drugstores and to the cafes and all that and the markets, and that's what I'm doing. I'm handing out flyers. I don't want anybody to be disturbed in their home. I don't like being disturbed in my home by somebody, so I don't want to disturb anybody else.
Yeah, because people have to eat, so they go to the grocery store.
Go to the grocery stores. You got it.
When I came back to the country, when I heard about what the Board of Supervisors were doing regarding taking away a Fourth Amendment, and it really bothered me because I'm in District 2 where Ellen Peary is, and there's two other candidates. There is no constitutional or defenders of private property. So I know it's late in the game, but I am going to be a write-in candidate for District 2.
Good.
I want to try to take votes away from Ellen Peary because she has been implementing smart growth in Agenda 21 and is quite serious about passing that. So again, Carolyn?
Yes.
Kudos to you, and also Vernon, we love you too.
Good, thank you. And Vernon's on KSEO every Friday at 12 to 2.
I will listen to him.
Thank you, Jeannie. I really appreciate it, and I love everything you guys do too.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Again, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in and talk to Carolyn, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. That's 464-8295. If you have a question for Carolyn, who's running for the Board of Supervisors here in the first electoral district of Santa Cruz, and you're, of course, that we cannot endorse people on this station, but I've known Carolyn for many years. She's always been very true to her beliefs, and she's always on the Republican Central Committee with me for many, many years, and certainly did everything she could to certainly push these basic principles of less government. Unfortunately, the Republican Party has abandoned their ideas of less government. Once they got into power, they wanted more government. They always pushed the idea of less spending. Once they got into power, they became the biggest spenders of all time. They always wanted peace, and certainly not to use the government for pushing wars of aggression. Once they got in power, they pushed wars of aggression, and of course, a preemptive war, establishing a terrible precedent. Because once you've established the fact that a preemptive war against an enemy is fine, then what's wrong with a preemptive attack on the United States? Because we might actually hurt somebody else's country. The Republican Party has abandoned Republican principles, and of course this is why I left the Central Committee of the Republican Party, and why I refused to finance them. So anyway, Carolyn is certainly...
And you were talking about the Republican Central Committee. I actually still am on it. I did not run this time, so I will be out of office in January. But what's interesting, when you didn't run again, when all the conservatives were voted out, only you and I were the only ones left, I think, but you didn't run after that next year. So anyway, I quit going to the meetings, and the reason is 2 years ago, I guess it was when... Schwarzenegger had all those petitions, all those propositions on the ballot. And I got a call one day from this really left guy, I can't remember what his name is now, and he asked me if I would be willing to debate the left side at Loudoun Nelson Center on this one issue, and I can't remember which issue he asked me about. But I said, sure, and anyway, I said, why'd you call me? And he says, well, he called Vic Mirani, who used to be the head of it, he's the one who led the effort to get rid of his Brook Firestone, financed him in his effort to take the Central Committee away from us conservatives and put it in the hands of the moderates. Under the guise, of course, they bought all the mailers and they sent everything out saying that we were not registering enough Republicans. So for many, several years even afterwards, at every monthly meeting, I would ask them, so how many Republicans did you register this month? And I was doing the smart, you know what, that I am. And anyway, because they, under the guise that our group wasn't registering Republicans, well, they aren't out there doing anything registering Republicans either. So anyway, I went ahead and I asked him, you know, so who's going to be debating on the other issues? And he says, well, you know, the reason he called me is because he'd called Vic, and Vic says he wasn't the chairman anymore, so Bob Ballard was to call him. So he called Bob Ballard, and he never got a call back from him. And it was getting close. It was just, I think he called me on a Saturday, and the next thing was going to be on Monday. So I said, sure, I'll debate you. I mean, I'll debate the people. And so then I said, who's going to debate the other issues? And well, I think I might get so-and-so. Well, they might get so-and-so. And I said, well, who's on this? And he said, he didn't know. So basically, I ended up, in the end, I was one person. There were six propositions. And it was me debating our side of the six propositions. And it was so funny because they had everybody from Cynthia Matthews, who's Planned Parenthood, and the People's Democratic Club, and all these other people, really, really leftist people in Santa Cruz. I would be staying up at the podium, and six other people would come up and debate me on each one of the six things. So the next Central Committee meeting, I actually asked Bob Ballard, I says, did you get a call from them? Well, yeah, I did, but I didn't call them back. I said, well, why didn't you call them back? And he said, well, why would I call them back? They're just the left side, and they're this, you know, with all this negative stuff. And this one secretary asked me, she was going to ask me something. I said, can you wait until I'm done? So she waited, and I says, okay, so you didn't do it because there was no use in debating them and all this and that. And I says, you know, you missed a great opportunity because I agreed to debate them. And because of that debate, I was called to be up at San Lorenzo Valley. I was called to be on community television. I was called by, I can't even remember who else now. And I says, you missed an opportunity. If you yourself don't know enough to handle all six of the propositions, you could have called up five other people in this group and told them to really read really fast and get themselves educated on it and go debate, because it was a great opportunity for our side to be presented. And you missed it. You didn't do anything about it. And I didn't do it as a person under the Central Committee. I did it as an individual. And I even, at every one of the first ones that I was asked to be at, that was, you know, they had first called the Central Committee, and I said, I'm not here as part of the Central Committee. I'm here as a concerned citizen, not as part of the Central Committee, because I wouldn't even let the Central Committee take credit for it because they did not call back, and I think it was terrible that they didn't do it. So that's why I quit going to meetings, because that's the lack of activity that these people are doing. They're doing nothing, Stan.
Now, they're only there, of course, to neutralize the Republican Party. Unfortunately, the Republican Party in California and at the national level has been taken over by people who, of course, don't believe in Republican principles.
No, they don't. It's interesting, though. Some of them actually do, but they're still so totally misled by this leadership that there's there now that is terrible, because there's nothing really happening. And so I refused to be there anymore. I just quit going. I just absolutely figured, why go? And, you know, back to our railway thing here, which we never did really finish talking about. They're talking about buying, I don't remember how many miles it is. It's probably 20 miles or so of railroad right away, and the whole rail system itself. the tracks and everything is what the county's buying. Well, it's going to be multi-million dollars to purchase it, multi-million dollars a year to keep it. And the people that wanted this are the bicycle people. They wanted it for a rail trail, for a bicycle thing, to put bicycle paths on it and a walking trail. And, you know, it's just, it's a pie-in-the-sky wish of a group of very few vocal people that are really vocal.
Well, I think you've missed the whole point. You know, they spent $250,000 on some sort of a study. I think that was what came out. And this committee, this study came up with the idea that we would actually make money by buying that, by running a freight line between Aptos and Capitola.
Well, they actually have a freight line that goes through, I think it's one or two trains a week.
Right, because they said that, I mean, this, you're talking about a distance of maybe 5 to 7 miles. They're going to haul freight from Capitola to Aptos, and that's how they're going to make the money for this. And we put out $50,000 for this study. I mean, they had this study, and they actually hired somebody suggesting that we could haul freight on this line. Who is going to put out money to haul freight over a distance of 7 miles?
You know what's interesting is the train runs between Watsonville and Davenport, and as I said, it's about 20 miles. And unless you also buy property at several spots along the way and put in large parking lots, it'd be absolutely useless. And even if you did have parking lots, you know, along the route, it wouldn't solve our traffic problems because the majority of people would not use it, even if there were parking lots.
Well, it's really all about, Carol, is what they want to do is get that property, and then they want to begin building their sustainable homes along that way where they can force us to, out of our homes in the hills. They wanted for assistance in sustainable homes, sustainable communities where they can watch us and monitor us. Just
like they want us in those high-density housing, and that's what they're going after now, and it's really interesting. There was one forum.
Well, our guest is Carolyn Boosenhart. Carolyn, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
There was one forum we went at, it was really funny, where the people pandered to the crowd. There was one that everybody got up there and said, oh, yes, they want this high-density housing. Yes, we're all for this, COPA. You've heard of COPA, which is the communities organized for relational power.
Right.
Anyway, they all want high-density housing. And everybody there, all the other candidates, yes, yes, I want this. Yes, yes, absolutely, without a doubt. The next night at a different meeting, the Live Oak Neighbors, I'm absolutely against high-density housing. So they pander to the crowd. I am not a person who would pander to the crowd. I will be responsible and respectful to the people out here, not the people who can buy my power, buy me to put me in office. I want the people to put me in office, the people that you just see at the grocery stores, that you see at the ball games, that you cheer for the same team, etc. And I think, you know, that I am probably the best candidate out there. I will be the hardest working. I have been studying county government for years. I know county government. I know the operation of some of the departments. I know what their tricks that they've done when they've done these illegal taxes, which I've gotten many of them rescinded. And I think, you know, my government needs to learn to live within year-to-year revenue increases instead of from existing taxes, instead of always looking for new ways to tax its citizenry. And I will be a watchdog on all of those issues. And I really feel that if I am elected, I can actually, you know, work on waste and excessive taxes full-time from within county government instead of just being out here as a citizen and working on these things part-time when they come to my attention or when I personally am affected by the taxes. I'm not this wonderful person who will go out and fight somebody else's battle too often. I have fought other people's battles for them, though, in the taxation issues in this county. But I still can, as a supervisor, I can work on waste and excessive taxes full-time from within county government instead of always having to do it from outside of county government. So I think I am the person that you need to elect. The county board of supervisors, you know, has consistently refused to listen to the needs of its taxpaying citizens, favoring instead the special interest groups that keep them in power. And if you want that to change, vote for me, Carolyn Boosenhart, on June 3rd. So, I don't know if I still have any more time.
You have about 20 seconds to wrap up the program.
I want to reduce crime. I want to solve salt water. If I'm supervisor, I will diligently work to reduce crime, solve the salt water, repair our aging neighborhood roads, and alleviate traffic congestion, streamline the paneling process, cut taxes in all forms, let the voters decide on increased taxes. I want to shrink our bloated county bureaucracy. I want to restrict government regulations, and I want to welcome new business and encourage growth.
Well, we're out of time. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our program. And if you're in another area, at least listen to what the issues are here, because they're the same issues in every community. And crime, and certainly water supplies, and certainly the bloated government bureaucracy. And, of course, cutting back the influence of government over the lives of the people. I think these are important issues everywhere in America. Because you must understand that the Marxists have organized all across America to take over local government, whether it be the fire board, whether it be the water board, whether it be the city council, the county board of supervisors. These people are totally dedicated to controlling you, and they will, as Carolyn said, go to a meeting every night of the week because they want power. And you want to be left alone, but unfortunately, why, of course, there is no neutral ground. You're either going to stand up and be counted, or you're going to be counted out. And I hope in your local communities, you'll remember what we talked about tonight, and that you will find people who are willing to take a stand to try to preserve our society. Because once they've taken over all of our local communities, then it's very easy to, of course, think globally, and then to act globally. But right now, they've accomplished this in so many of our states and so many of our communities. So let me first just remind you this at the time. Well, I have to tell you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will, if you're in a position to, will decide to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, we're going to see lots worse financial times, and if you don't understand what's happening financially, you need to get my talk, The Financial Tsunami, and you get the syllabus that goes with that. You need to get the book, A Creature from Jekyll Island, the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and the book, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, and my little pamphlets on the history of money and the financial meltdown. That's Financial Tsunami, the talk, the syllabus, the book, Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin, the book, Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, the book, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, and the pamphlets, The History of Money, and the pamphlet, The Financial Meltdown. There is an organized effort to destroy the currency of our nation. For as Lenin had said, there's no better way to destroy a nation than to debauch the currency, and not one person in a million will understand what's happening. And the people who are admirers of Lenin are today in the process of destroying the value of our currency, and with that, the sovereignty of our nation. Their plan, a one-world government, a one-world religion, a one-world leader. To verify what we're talking about, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to actually get it, call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will certainly get the other items which are available from Radio Liberty. Go to our webpage and look at the material. You want to understand weather warfare? We've got material. You want to understand the true story of UFOs? The DVD entitled The Government Secrecy, UFOs. And it's very, very well done. And, of course, you want to understand the assassination of Martin Luther King? You've never heard the true story. Actually, it was a CIA organized a mafia hit. How do we know? Because there was a trial that was held, and the jury came up and concluded that the government was 70% responsible for the murder of Martin Luther King. The four-tape set, The Execution of Martin Luther King, and the book that goes with that, An Act of State, written by William Pepper, who was the attorney hired by the King family to bring the trial, to bring the case to court. Why have you never heard of it? Why, ladies and gentlemen, because the media in America is controlled. That's why you've never heard of it. The degree of control over the American media is almost total. There are five mega corporations that control 90 to 95% of the media. Fortunately, we are able to buy time on radio stations across the country. We actually have shortwave, we have internet, we have satellite uplinks, and you get certainly our programs on Telstar 5 by getting an inexpensive satellite dish, and there you can listen to us 9 hours a day. So remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then, of course, please tell others about our program. and pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Gentlemen, wherever you are situated on this great big beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation, it is Wednesday, the 28th of May, 2008. And there are a lot of things coming up this weekend all over the country. Folks that see the political quagmire that we are stuck in, and those that have taken it upon themselves, banded together, and decided to fight this multi-tentacled beast that has taken over the entire Western world. And the beast doesn't want to go down lightly.